take care of it. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR now or visit kpft.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
The Historic Heights Theater on 19th Street hosts a wide variety of concerts and special events. Upcoming concerts include Latino punk pioneer Alejandro Escovedo on Sunday, January 6th, Joan Osborne singing the songs of Bob Dylan on Friday, February 7th, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame guitar greats Dave Mason and Steve Cropper's Rock and Soul Review on Friday, March 1st, and a Bowie celebration featuring the David Bowie Alumni Tour on Wednesday, March 20th. For more information or to get tickets, visit theheightstheater.com. This is KPFT Houston.
Program originating in Houston devoted to live storytelling, and we're right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host. Each week, Hank, Greg, Mary, Tatiana, and I celebrate the power of story by bringing you remarkable tellers who take us on captivating journeys, and then they return us safely home. We like to feature a variety of stories on this show. We feature traditional stories. These include everything from folk tales to religious myths and parables to children's fairy tales. We like to feature personal stories, true stories from our own lives. These include stories by people like David Sedaris, or if you've listened to Ira Glass's This American Life, or of course, the Moth Radio Hour. And then there are those stories we tell on this show that fall within the realm of fiction. In the past year, we've read you short stories by creative talents, people like Raymond Carver and O. Henry and Edgar Allan Poe. Tonight, we're going to do something different and explore the way that music serves as a vehicle for telling a story, whether it's a traditional Irish ballad, an operatic aria, a Broadway show tune, or a pop song by Adele. A story told through music packs a 1-2 punch, combining unforgettable tunes with a compelling story. Some of the greatest music ever written, and some of the most powerful stories ever told, are found within the classic genre known as opera. But have you ever noticed how some of us get intimidated by opera? I'm not sure why, but perhaps tonight we can figure that out, because tonight's guests have made it their mission to take the intimidation out of opera and put the fun back in it. We had them on the show last year. Actually, it was the first show last year. And they were so popular, we invited them back for the first show this year. Eric Skelly is Senior Director of Communications for the Houston Symphony Orchestra, where he hosts a weekly radio broadcast of the Houston Symphony Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. on 88.7 KUHF. He was formerly CEO of ROCCO, River Oaks Chamber Orchestra, and he also, you may know him through his reviews of classical music and opera for the Houston Chronicle, Time Out, Playbill, Arts and Culture, Texas Magazine, among others. St. John Flynn was born and raised in the UK, but St. John came to the US to attend graduate school, and he's worked since for top US public TV and radio stations for more than 20 years, including as host of the award-winning book show Cover to Cover for Georgia Public Broadcasting Radio Network, and host and classical music director for KUHF 88.7 FM and Arts and Culture Director for Houston Public Media. That includes TV Channel 8, News 88.7 FM Radio, and Classical 91.7. He hosted for many years the daily arts radio show, The Front Row, one of my all-time favorites. And, of course, he's the co-host of the Opera Cheat Sheet podcast. He's the host of He has been host in the past of Houston Symphony weekly radio broadcasts and various TV arts programs, including Houston Symphony season announcements and the Skyline sessions. He was also a cast member of Manner of Speaking, and that's M-A-N-O-R of Speaking, Channel 8's Emmy award-winning syndicated Downton Abbey after show. And he is, of course, the longtime host of Houston Grand Opera Guild's Opera Night Live series. He's appeared on stage as narrator for the Houston Symphony and many other orchestras. And just a couple of months ago, since this is a storytelling show, I have to say he narrated one of the best stories ever written, Peter and the Wolf for the Houston Symphony. Sinjin, Eric, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
We're so delighted you came. For those new to opera, and perhaps also to the world of podcasting, what exactly is the Opera Cheat Sheet?
That was something that Sinjin cooked up, actually, initially.
Yeah, when I was working for Houston Public Media, I was looking for ways to enhance our opera programming. We carried the Met Saturday broadcasts, mm-hmm. But I wanted to be able to do more. And I knew, you know, Eric was on staff, and I know, you know, he's an opera expert, mm-hmm. and so we conceived of this idea of doing a weekly podcast, or whatever you want to call it, that would sort of demystify, but give people a handle on the opera that was coming up on the Saturday afternoon Met broadcast.
In a way that was comfortable, that was not, as you put it, Warren, is not intimidating. It's not, you know, it's not the Holy Grail. It's very complex, and you can get as involved in it as you want to and study it and all that sort of thing. But at its heart, it's entertainment. And you should be able to just enjoy it and relax and not feel intimidated in any way. So we've always
been very lighthearted. We don't take ourselves too seriously.
That's an understatement.
We take the art form seriously in the sense that, you know, we come at it out of, you know, a love for opera. But, you know, we don't see it, as Eric says, as being this sort of this holy thing that we have to bow down to. It's an art form. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's sad, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we will do it all.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to just call it. You know, when the opera plot is just absurd, just say so and have a laugh over it and recognize the fact that the music ennobles it. The music is what makes it worthwhile. But on its surface, if you just look at the plots of some of these things, it's just, oh, are you kidding?
You don't think it's normal to sing an aria after you've been stabbed to death?
Well, that's a whole nother conversation. I'm talking about, you know, the most famous is, of course, Il Trovatore, which has just got this incredibly convoluted back plot before the opera even opens. And you just, you know, to take it so seriously and just pretend that this is all very normal, it's ridiculous. You can't do that. So,
but the thing with opera is that it is a coming together of so many different art forms. Mm-hmm. You've got singing, you've got music, you've got you know, theater, mm-hmm. Dance, mm-hmm. Acting, you know, mm-hmm. it brings them all together, and so you've got I think more bang for your buck.
Yeah,
you know, when you sit and watch an opera, you know, you've got all these things that are stimulating, you know, all your different senses and different emotions.
And when it all comes together perfectly, there's nothing like it. There's nothing that equals it, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
But once in a while, sometimes, you know, maybe one element is not quite as strong as another, and you have to say so.
Yeah. I mean, there are always, in any art form, good productions and not quite so good productions. And, you know, to think that every opera that ever gets performed is the best thing that's ever been written is not the case.
Right. But they always have something, and it's usually in the music.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes it worthwhile.
Well, when you were on the show a year ago, you retold the story of Jacques Offenbach's comic opera, The Tales of Hoffman. And, of course, our listeners can access that through the Houston Storytellers Guild website. We still have it posted on there. It was a fascinating story to feature on the show because it was a rather sophisticated story.
Yes.
Many shorter tales used to tell one longer tale. And here at KPFT, we were honored because we believe that was your first ever live podcast on the radio.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
I think we've recovered by now.
So it took us a year.
Is this the second live?
It is.
And what have you got for us tonight?
Beethoven's Fidelio.
Welcome to the Opera Cheat Sheet. I'm St. John Flynn.
And I'm Eric Skelly.
And this time we're talking about Ludwig van Beethoven's Fidelio, Eric, which debuted in Vienna in 1805.
Yeah, and it is of a genre of opera, or maybe we would call it a subgenre, called rescue opera. And this is a genre that arose as a product, really, of the French Revolution in France and Germany. And I think the first rescue opera was André Grétry's Richard the Lionhearted. And the last rescue opera, and its greatest, and the one that has held on in the standard repertoire, is Beethoven's Fidelio. And they're called rescue operas because the story...
Somebody's rescued?
Yeah. Well, yeah. How did you know?
Intuition.
It always involves, the story always involves somebody who has been imprisoned, usually for political reasons. So, you know, it's always about, you know, Richard the Lionhearted being imprisoned, or in this case, you have a political imprisonment of rival noblemen, one imprisoning the other and plotting to kill him. And then, of course, the subsequent rescue of the political prisoner.
Person. Yeah. And in fact, there are several operas that have that same rescue sense. I mean, as well as Fidelio, there's a Tosca. There is a political element to Tosca.
But that one doesn't work.
Oh, no, it's not successful.
It's not successful at all.
But it's nearly successful. And then, of course, you have Andrea Chenier.
Also, not successful. They die, St. John. Horrible deaths. They die horrible deaths at the end of those operas.
Picky, picky, picky. No, but what's interesting is that these are political acts.
True.
And in the case of Fidelio, we're lucky in that they all live happily ever after.
Except the villain.
Fidelio is the opera's title, but it wasn't the opera's original title.
No. It was originally titled, well, first before it was even, you know, they even went with this story, Beethoven was sort of commissioned by Emanuel Schikaneder, who was the librettist of Mozart's The Magic Flute. And he was an impresario, and he wanted Beethoven to write this opera called Vestas Feuer. And Beethoven... What?
It's just, you know, I know. That famous opera.
That famous opera, Vestas Feuer. Beethoven balked when he saw the libretto for that and said, no, 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 I'm not doing this. But he settled on this particular libretto. And I think it was originally supposed to be titled Leonora, right?
Right. It was based on a libretto that had been prepared by Jean-Nicolas Bouy, who was a French playwright.
Right.
And he had prepared a libretto for another composer called Pierre Gaveau, who had written, produced this opera called Leonora.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this whole story about the overture to Fidelio.
Because there are four of them.
Because there are four of them. Three of them are called the Leonora.
Right. Because, 1, 2, and 3.
Because in 1805, when this piece debuted, it was under the title Leonora. But they changed it because they didn't want people to think that it was the other Leonora. So they assumed the name of the fictional character that Leonora assumes in the opera, which is Fidelio. And he wrote it in 1805. It debuted in Vienna. And it wasn't an immediate hit, largely because anybody who was anybody in Vienna had left because of Napoleon and his troops had come into the city.
Mm.
And so the first audiences were primarily French military soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't do very well. Beethoven rewrote it. 1806, it came. There was another production. And he didn't like that one either. So the version that's performed today is the 1814, which is where I think Beethoven felt he'd got his ducks in a row. And
right.
It's Fidelio. And this is the way it is. It was reduced, I think, from three acts
to two.
To mm-hmm. two.
Yeah.
It was all tidied up and straightened out. And
oftentimes they still insert the Leonora number 3 overture in that little slot between. Well, we'll get to that one. We'll get to that a little bit when we do the synopsis. But
so it's set in 18th century Spain, outside of Seville,
right?
And there is a corrupt nobleman by the name of Pizarro. Don Pizarro. And he is the governor of a jail. And he has been a naughty man.
Yeah, he has. He got crosswise with another nobleman politically. And Pizarro responded by imprisoning this other nobleman sort of clandestinely and throwing him into a hole, basically, a completely dark hole for basically the past 2 years, and slowly starving the man to the brink of death, with the intention of ultimately killing him. And he's actually sent the word out in the community that he's already dead.
And that person is Florestan.
Yes.
And Florestan, as you say, has been cooped up in this dungeon for 2 years, 2 years. Everybody thinks he's dead because that's what Pizarro has told everybody.
Except
his wife, Florestan's wife.
Leonora,
who believes, she feels that he's still alive.
Yeah. And she thinks he knows where he might be.
Because Pizarro, the sort of sworn enemy of Florestan, and Leonora gets a job at the prison, at the castle, in fact.
In disguise.
And it's a great disguise because she's disguised as a boy.
Yeah. And she calls herself Fidelio.
Fidelio.
And so she's gotten herself a job assisting the jailer, whose name is Rocco. And she's ingratiated herself and is trying to find out if, in fact, her husband is in there somewhere. She doesn't know yet. She doesn't really know for sure. But
because there are many prisoners in the
there are indeed.
In the prison.
There are indeed. So as the opera opens, we meet two of the sort of supporting characters. One of them is the daughter of Rocco, the jailer. Her name is Marcellina. And then there's also this young man, Yakino, who is in love with her.
But she's not in love with him.
She used to be, but she's not anymore.
That's right, because she's in love with Fidelio.
Yeah.
Oops.
Now, I don't want to disparage Marcelina's intelligence, but let's just say when the list of candidates comes out for the MacArthur Genius Grant, she's not going to be on it. Okay?
The opening of Fidelio is actually quite comic, because you've got Marcelina and Giacchino. And Giacchino is in love with Marcelina.
Yeah.
And he thinks that she used to be in love with him. She's now got her eyes set on Fidelio, who apparently has been working there for about 6 months.
And
Rocco.
Right. And Fidelio, a.k.a. Leonora, doesn't want to blow her cover, and so she's sort of trying to hold Marcelina off at arm's length, but not altogether discouraging her either.
This is the late 18th century. Anything goes.
You got that right. So that's the situation with the opera opens. You've got Marcelina and Giacchino just kind of bantering back and forth, and that's where we learn that he's still in love with her, but she's in love with Fidelio. And then Rocco himself comes in with Fidelio, and we hear as Fidelio, quote unquote, you can't see me making air quotes on the air, but I'm making air quotes. Fidelio is trying to subtly pump him for information about the prisoners,
because there are areas of the prison that Rocco won't take Fidelio.
Right.
There are sort of, you know, he's not allowed to go into the sort of the lower depths.
Right.
Rocco can only go down there on his own or with Pizarro.
And ostensibly, Rocco tells Fidelio that he doesn't want to take him down there because the sight of this one particular prisoner is just really rough. And he's afraid that Fidelio can't handle it.
Because, as we said, Florestan has been down in the dark for 2+ years.
And they've been slowly reducing his rations and basically, you know, starving him to the brink of death.
And what Fidelio wants to do is to get down there to see if this mysterious prisoner is, in fact, Florestan, her husband.
Right, because the more she hears about him, the more certain she becomes that that is, in fact, her husband. So that's the situation when you hear a trumpet fanfare announcing the arrival of the governor of the prison, Don Pizarro, our villain. And it's tempting somewhat to paint him as this two-dimensional mustache-twirling villain, but he's not quite, because he's more venal than that. He's a nasty piece of work, really. He's someone for whom the end justifies any means, and the end being his political power.
And he has abused that power, and continues to abuse that power. I mean, he rules the prison with an iron rod, and you know there is a sort of a special circle of hell for people that do this sort of thing,
yeah,
that abuse their situation, their authority, for their own personal gain, to get rid of their own enemies.
One of the reasons why this opera remains timeless, because we keep running into these people over and over and over again. There never seems to be a shortage of them, and Pizarro is just the most loathsome example.
And I think one of the reasons that Beethoven was drawn to this libretto is because there is that sense here of we're dealing with a world where we've had the French Revolution,
mm-hmm.
the Industrial Revolution. Europe has changed, and absolute power and autocracy has suffered greatly.
Yeah.
And if you think about Beethoven's Ode to Joy in the Ninth Symphony, it's this celebration of, you know, liberty, egality, fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all equal, we're all humans, we're all humankind, and we should all live together. And it's the that sense of the Enlightenment coming into this more romantic view of human existence.
Yeah. But for the meanwhile, let's get back to Scummy Pizzaro. He's got a killer aria, which we don't have time to play tonight, but he's got, for a bass baritone, this is one of the most difficult things to sing. It's called Ha Welcheid Augenblick.
Say that again.
Ha, exclamation point. Welch ein Augenblick. In the blink of an eye, his fortunes are going to turn when he kills Florestan. He's got it in his head that's where this is going.
One of the things that we learn from Fidelio when he appears is that he's been out running errands, etc., and he comes back with various letters, etc., for Pizarro and Rocco. And they learn that the Don Fernando, who is one of the king's ministers, the Minister of Justice or something like that, is going to be making a surprise, quote-unquote surprise visit to the prison.
Right.
To check, because there have been rumors that all is not as it should be.
Exactly. And so Pizarro resolves that he's got to get this over with quickly. And so he tries to get Rocco to do it for him, to go down there and kill Florestan. And Rocco says, oh, no, 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 no. No, no, no. I'm not committing murder for you, dude. So Pizarro resolves that he has to do it himself. And he arranges with Rocco to, you know, give him a signal so that he can get it done before Don Fernando arrives there. And he also orders Rocco to dig a grave in the cell so that he can dispose of the body quickly. And all of this is overheard by
Fidelio.
Yeah.
She's got a tremendous amount of smarts.
She does.
And we should say that the original Leonora libretto and the original operas had a subtitle, which was Conjugal Love. And it's a celebration of, you know, a wife's love for her husband.
Right.
And Fidelio is, she's working it out pretty well so far.
She is. And it's at this point that she has her big show-stopping aria, Abscheuliche, where she reacts to the horror of what she's just heard.
And you can hear the sort of the panic in her voice. Of course, she doesn't know that the person, the prisoner that they're going to kill and whose grave they have to dig, is necessarily Florestan.
But she's becoming more and more sure that it very well may be.
And she wants to get down there to find out before Pizarro's plan comes to fruition.
Exactly, exactly. So in the meantime, they arrange, as a sort of humanitarian gesture, to allow the rest of the prisoners, excluding Florestan, of course, because they never let him out, but they arrange to give the other prisoners just a moment out in the courtyard to feel the sun on their face and experience, fresh air. Despite the fact that they know that Pizarro would not like that. but they let the prisoners out, and there's this beautiful chorus of the prisoners as they feel sun on their face for the first time in who knows how long before Pizarro gets word of it and is not happy, and they basically usher them back into their cells again.
But it's because of Fidelio that the prisoners get this few minutes or a few hours of relief.
Yeah, because Rocco's just going to go along to get along. He will not ever go against Pizarro's wishes. But Fidelio is sort of this breath of humanitarian fresh air in the prison.
And you have the image there of the doors of the cells being opened and these prisoners emerging into the light,
yeah.
Blinded by the light because they've been kept in darkness. And it must be a really powerful scene to see these men coming out, seeing the sun for the first time in, you know, God alone knows how long they've been cooped up in the cells.
Exactly.
But Fidelio creates this respite for them. And that really is a sense, gives us a sense of her goodness.
And you can feel the relief in Beethoven's music. You can feel the sweet taste of just a little bit of freedom. It's not real freedom, but it's the closest thing they've had in who knows how long, years maybe.
We have this panic almost in Pizarro when he finds that the king's minister is on his way, and Pizarro puts this plan into place. As you said, he gets Rocco to go down into the dimmest part of the dungeon where Florestan is and to start digging his grave, and to let Pizarro know when he's finished.
Right.
At the same time, Pizarro sends guards up onto the battlements of the castle prison with the instruction that as soon as they see something on the horizon,
signal him
with a trumpet call.
Yeah.
So that he's got as much notice as possible
to get down there and do the dirty deed.
Do the dirty deed.
Yes.
When the prisoners are let out by Fidelio and Rocco, and they have these moments of humanity, Pizarro comes back and finds them and pitches a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts everybody on edge again. And that's a great place for Act One to stop.
So there it is.
End of Act One.
End of Act One.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT. You can catch us at 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville, online at www.kpft.org. My guests tonight are St. John Flynn and Eric Skelly from the amazing podcast, The Opera Cheat Sheet. And they're doing a podcast tonight, live, of Beethoven's Fidelio.
One thing I neglected to mention about Act One.
What?
Is that when Pizarro comes back and finds that they've let the prisoners out, I don't know if it's Rocco or Fidelio that comes up with the excuse, well, it's the king's birthday.
Mm, right.
And so this is how, you know, we're allowing the prisoners to celebrate the king's birthday. In other words, something that Pizarro really can't disagree with.
True. True.
Act Two, Eric, opens incredibly.
If you thought Act One was tense, this one opens in Florestan's cell in the dark. And a really somber orchestral introduction to this begins and leads into Florestan's great monologue, which begins with the words, Gott, welch Dunkel hier, God, what darkness here.
Welch Dunkel hier.
So you could hear, we get an aural sense of what the last 2 years have done to this man. He is in the absolute pit of despair. He's close to death, and he kind of wishes maybe, you know, just let's just get this over with. But then he thinks of his wife, Leonora. And it's that thought that suddenly you can hear life just suffuse every you know vein in his body, and he gets excited and he thinks of this mein Engel Leonora, my angel Leonora, and it's almost
like he has this vision.
He does. It's almost like a hallucination,
right?
And he gets really excited, and he's so weakened that he collapses at the end of it.
Because think about it, he knows he's in prison.
Okay.
He knows that he's being starved.
Yeah.
I don't know that he even knows who it is that has put him in prison.
No, we know he doesn't know, because in a little bit, when Pizarro comes down there, he's going to make a point to let him know.
Right.
Because Florestan has no idea why he's there and why he's been there for 2 years. Maybe he suspects, but he doesn't know for
sure.
Nothing
has been confirmed.
Right.
So it's a great role, because you only have to do one of the two acts.
Yeah.
The first act, you can sit in your dressing room and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, but we're going to get our money's worth out of this guy now. He's got some major singing to do in the second act.
So, Rocco and Fidelio come down into the dungeon and begin
digging.
To dig the grave that Florestan will be tossed into after Pizarro has killed him.
Yeah.
And of course, because of the darkness, Fidelio, who has been trying for the whole opera to get Rocco to take her down into this deepest part of the dungeon, she still can't see who the prisoner is.
Because he's collapsed, and it's dark.
Right.
But he does come around again. Florestan does.
And she asks Rocco if they can give him some bread and water. And again, it's like taking the prisoners out of their cells in the first act. You know, there is this innate goodness. And
she keeps pushing the boundaries.
Right, in Fidelio. And Rocco says, well, okay, you know, don't tell anybody, but okay. So they give Florestan the bread and some water.
And she recognizes it.
She recognizes
it. She knows it. Exactly who that is. He, however, doesn't know who she is yet, and we could give him a pass because he's at death's door. It's
and
dark,
she's dressed as a boy,
and he's at death's door. He gets a pass. Okay? So, as they're doing this, suddenly we hear an alarm, and Pizarro shows up because he's been signaled, and he's come down with the full intention of ending Florestan's life right then.
Because they finished digging the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rocco has let him know that, you know, you can come down now, sir.
Exactly.
And he does.
He does. And he draws a knife, and he advances on Florestan, and he is hell-bent on making this happen. He's going to kill him right then and there, except...
Dun-dun! It's the climax of the whole opera.
And it's an iconic scene in opera, because you've got, you know, the villain advancing with a knife. We've got, you know, this poor man who's been in prison for 2 years, starved to death, helpless to stop him, and in steps Leonora, a.k.a. Fidelio, pulls a gun on Pizarro and says, you'll have to kill me first.
And as soon as she does that, we hear
the trumpets.
The sentries looking out for the arrival of the minister sound the trumpet. He is on the horizon, about to make it to the castle.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly, everything is sort of panicked.
Yeah. The fortunes have completely reversed.
Right.
So...
Because Pizarro knows it's too late. The game's up. He's not going to be able to get away with it.
Right. So Yaquino comes in and says, here comes Don Fernando. And Rocco then has the soldiers that are following Yaquino actually take Pizarro and take him out of there. Because all bets are off now. And finally, Florestan recognizes when she reveals herself that it was his wife, that it's not a hallucination. She really did come, and she saved his life, and they are reunited at last.
It's a sort of double whammy because, as you said, when Pizarro comes down into the dungeon, he tells Florestan who he is.
Yeah, because he's a villain, and he has to tell it. He has to gloat a little bit.
So Florestan learns that he's been kept captive all these years by his enemy, and then he learns that the boy with the gun is his wife,
right,
who's come to save him.
And has, in fact, saved him. And that's when we get the big duet, O Namenlose Freude.
O Namenlose Freude.
Got to admit, Beethoven really knew how to do Freude, right?
That's right, yes.
Freude, of course, meaning joy, and we have the Ode to Joy. We have this radiant, glorious, joyous duet that you can't help but smile when you hear it.
And we were talking earlier about some of the idiosyncrasies of opera. You know, here you have Florestan, who's been languishing in this dungeon for 2 years, being starved, slowly starved to death, and suddenly he can burst out into this wonderful duet with his wife.
Yeah, of course. As you would. Oh, so the scene changes now to back up into the courtyard of the prison, and so Don Fernando shows up on the scene. And it turns out, guess who Don Fernando's friend is? Who has been missing for 2 years is Florestan.
Wow, what a coincidence.
Wow.
And of course, the beauty in that is that suddenly what Pizarro has been doing becomes very personal for the minister.
Oh, yeah. And Rocco gives him all the details, tells him exactly what Pizarro has been doing all this time. And so Pizarro is summarily arrested and led away in chains.
And everybody else lives happily ever after.
Pretty much.
But you do actually have that wonderful scene down in the dungeon where Fidelio actually removes the chains from Florestan, the chains that are chained him to the wall, and she gets to take those off in a very symbolic gesture that it's through her actions and her love that she has rescued Florestan.
And what a wonderful, you know, reversal, a very forward-thinking reversal for an opera that's this old, that, you know, you don't have the tenor coming in to rescue the soprano. It's quite the other way around.
What about Marcellina? She must have felt...
Well, she's a little dumbfounded. She's a little... She's a little nonplussed. But she's still got Yaquino. He's still hanging around. God love him.
This, I don't think we've said this yet, this Fidelio is Beethoven's only opera.
That's very true.
And
I don't think he particularly enjoyed the process of writing an opera. I think it really kind of took it out of him, and I think you know, other circumstances, of course, intervened. But I think it's not an accident that he only wrote one. It was sort of one and done.
And it took him basically 10, 11 years to get this one into a shape that he was happy with.
Right.
And he never did it again.
Mm-mm. Sadly.
But it crystallizes so much of what Beethoven was about. You know, there, in a strange sort of way, there is a very political strain to much of Beethoven's music.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the culmination of that being the Ninth Symphony.
The Ode to Joy.
The Ode to Joy. And here we have very much the same sort of concerns and the same view of mankind and existence here in Fidelio as we get in the Ode to Joy.
Indeed. Freude.
Freude. Sigmund Freude.
So there we have it, Beethoven's Fidelio.
That's right. That's this week's Opera Cheat Sheet. Thank you for listening.
Indeed.
Bravo. Bravo. That was wonderful. Sitting here watching you retell this story, I was just struck by how much you enjoy doing it.
Oh, it is purely fun, and that's one of the reasons, I think, why we did it as long as we did. I think we did it like 5 years, and we're currently reviving it, because it was always fun. No matter how bad a day I was having, I knew that I would get to go up and laugh with my friend and, you know, have fun talking about opera, and it was pure joy. It really was.
And in fact, oftentimes a lot of stuff ended up on the cutting room floor.
Oh, a lot. A lot was not arable.
approximately how many podcasts did you do? How many operas did you cover?
Oh, gosh.
We did
well over 100.
Yes.
Are there any operas left?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Plenty. Plenty. See, even some standard rep stuff.
Yeah.
We would do, let's say the Met was doing La Boheme.
Uh-huh.
We would do a La Boheme cheat sheet ahead of that broadcast. And then, you know, maybe a year or two later, they'd do Boheme again. And we might use the same podcast. But then, if it was coming around a third time, we'd say to each other, well, we need to do
freshen
it again.
It up
we need
a
to
bit.
Freshen it up.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We were limited to the Met's repertoire, but we are no longer limited to that. So we can basically do what we want going forward.
There were some great challenges, and that was sometimes the opera that was being broadcast might be a world premiere. And neither of us obviously had seen it.
And you had no way to cheat?
No. We had no way to cheat.
No.
I mean, you know, you can always, because, you know, a world premiere by a major opera company is an event in the cultural world. You can find out, you know, a certain amount about the piece and about, you know, about the composer, etc.
But you can't talk about the music because you haven't heard it.
That's right.
Yeah.
We can't hum it, you know.
Right. Well, I'm going to give you guys a chance to catch your breath, and okay. We're going to catch our listeners up on the Houston Storytelling Calendar. Tatiana?
Well, a big thank you, as always, to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild hosts a story swap the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emanuel across from Rice University. Also, check out the Guild's event page for other storytelling activities around the Houston area. There you'll learn about a workshop our very own Dr. Hank Rupacek is teaching, entitled Crafting Personal Narratives. The workshop is offered in February through the Women's Institute of Houston. But you can learn all about the workshop and how to register through the link on the HSG events page. And while you're there on the Guild's website, check out their archives of all of our previous shows. All 400 of them, over 400 of them. Just click on the radio program tab and you'll be in story heaven.
And what about the moth?
The next Houston Moth Story Slam is coming up next week, Tuesday, January 8th at Warehouse Live. The January theme, appropriately enough, is intentions. You'll hear stories about New Year's resolutions and to-do lists. And you'll be reminded that the best laid plans of mice and men, well, they don't always pan out.
Or plan out, for that matter. Now let's move beyond Houston to storytelling events statewide.
It's time to register for the 34th Annual Texas Storytelling Festival. The festival will be March 7th through the 10th in Denton, Texas. To learn more about, visit the website for the Tejas Storytelling Association. That's Tejas, spelled T-E-J-A-S.
And circling back to our own show, Hank is hosting next week, and he's actually here tonight, so I'm going to let him tell you about his special guests.
Warren, we've got a great show next week. We've got seven exchange students from the Houston area talking about their own perceptions and impressions about going to school in America, and they are worth listening to.
And a reminder, whether it's next week's show or any other of our shows, you don't need a radio to listen to us, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org, and you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Finding more and more ways to bring you engaging stories from passionate storytellers. Warren?
And I'm here, in fact, with two passionate master storytellers, Sinjin Flynn and Eric Skelly of the Opera Cheat Sheet. And I'm going to ask Hank to stay with us as well, because he's not only a master storyteller, he's also a master story critic. Is that the word, Hank?
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I want you two gentlemen to feel very comfortable saying, Hank, shut up, because you don't know what you're talking about, because that's probably what you're going to be thinking in a moment. But, you know, I love the fact that we're kicking the year off with you two gentlemen again. Next year, our first show of the year is going to be on New Year's Day, January 1st, so we better schedule you guys right now. Right? Because I think that this is a great way to begin the year. I told Warren earlier today, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about opera, but I do know this, that opera, at least from what I understand, is the original multimedia. Is that fair? And it is perhaps the most emotionally direct of all art forms. And I think in many ways, that's what the two of you demonstrate. You put on an ensemble performance that I think demonstrates the vulnerability of the human voice and how it really does demonstrate the closest thing that we have to pure emotion. I think that the kind of creative decisions that performers make in opera impact point of view, I think, and that's what the two of you do when you tell the story together. You impact point of view. I mean, for example, Beethoven is known for symphonies and deafness, not an opera. And I think you changed that perspective tonight. And the idea of taking a plot which is hardly simple and making it as pedestrian friendly as you did is to be applauded. Opera is not typically viewed as being traditional storytelling at all. But, you know, storytelling is multidimensional. When I hear a voice, I figure, you know, this is a soprano, so it's probably demonstrating some kind of innocent persona. And when I hear a baritone, I think about a persona that's bolder, maybe more assertive. And that's hard to understand unless you get a narrative interpretation of the opera itself. Does that make sense, or am I?
Yeah, no, it
totally,
does. And very well said, and thank you for the kind words.
And I think that that's what the two of you do so well. You make opera attainable, accessible, and that's what I appreciate. And thank you for that.
Thank you.
We love doing it.
That's the goal.
Sitting here watching you do this, it's like, to me, it reminds me of being with my brother, and we're telling some story from childhood that we have a lot of passion about. And one will start the sentence, the other one will finish the sentence, and we just build on each other and build the story together. It's sort of like a duet. And that's what you guys do with opera. And there's just an enthusiasm and exuberance in the room.
Well, I appreciate what you all do, too, because I've seen, you know, I've seen The Moth, and I've seen you do storytelling. And I mean, we are all in the business of storytelling, but what we do is very different because it's extemporaneous. And what you do is very carefully calibrated, and it's impressive.
Yes, in case you, I guess I'm the only one who sees what's going on here, but these men are not They have no script. No. They're just telling the story.
I think they got that.
No, it's nice.
Fired the scriptwriter.
And Hank, I think one thing we do with our artist guests is give them a chance just to say a word about what they have coming up next in their art projects or activities.
Do you want to go first, Sinjin?
Yes, why not? I'm next week, actually, January 10th, with a good friend of mine. We're giving a talk at the MFAH, mm-hmm. the Museum of Fine Arts, in conjunction with the exhibit Tudors to the Windsors, however many years of royal portrait painting, the traveling exhibit that is currently up, which runs through the end of January.
Would that friend be Helen Mann?
That friend would be Helen Mann. Helen and I were both both British, and we were both regular cast members of Manner of Speaking, the mm-hmm. Downton Abbey after show.
M-A-N-O-R.
And she and I are doing a talk titled Horrible History. And we will be looking at some of the lesser known historical facts about some of these famous monarchs from Henry VIII all the way up to Elizabeth II. So that's next Thursday. Is it Thursday? January 10th. Anyway,
at the Museum of Fine Arts. Wonderful. How about you, Eric?
Symphony, and Houston Symphony. It's all about the symphony with me these days, which is wonderful. I mean, yeah. I am so lucky. This weekend, we have Rhapsody in Blue.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Which is very exciting. Coming up later this month, we have a wonderful pops program called Totally 80s. And then at the end of the month, our music director, Andres Orozco Estrada, comes back, and he is leading Ravel's La Valse, which is an amazing work. And then later in the season, we've got Bluebeard's Castle, an opera, which Andres Orozco Estrada is leading. We've got Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, screened live with the orchestra playing live. We've got Star Wars, screened live with the orchestra playing live. Star Wars A New Hope. I mean, so much exciting stuff. It's every week, and it's challenging in a wonderful way, and I love this job so much.
And what's challenging to me is I would like to talk longer, but can you believe we're out of time?
No! Wow.
Sinjin, Eric, thank you for being with us on So What's Your Story.
Thank you very much
for having us.
Our pleasure.
And will you come back January 1st
absolutely.
Next year?
Yeah, absolutely.
In the spirit of your exuberant storytelling, we're going to go off the air with the exuberant final chorus of Beethoven's Fidelio. And up next is Cool Conversation with Flash Gordon Parks. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us Wednesdays at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team and the Opera Cheat Sheet team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace and joy.
KPFT's local station board meeting will be held on the second Wednesday of the month at the Montrose Center. That's 401 Brainerd Street, Houston, Texas, 77006. Public comment will be available from 8 to 8:30. Meetings of Pacifica Foundation's Radio Board of Directors and all of its standing committees are